And with that, I want to welcome all of you who are on the call, and particularly Brian Lee, who is chair of our policy committee. Brian.
And that would be now co-chair with Jessica, who's also on the line. And since we are recording for people who may not have a chance to be here, we will if you can't be here with us, we're glad to have a chance to speak with you by recording. So we will just provide an update. It's been several months since the last policy committee call, and we have a new budget proposed. As of yesterday, a new state budget revision released. So we will just kind of walk through the normal order, which is kind of we'll have state budget update first, and then a state legislative update, state administrative update, and then if we do get someone from the After School Alliance on the phone, which we're expecting, we'll get the federal update from them, and then we will turn to Mary Jo and get a regional lead update from
Brian.
A local perspective. So first things first is the budget, and as folks probably know, because Prop 30 passed, there's a lot more money this year, and cuts that have been on the table for so many years are not on the table. That's good news. After school state funding, which is protected by Prop 49, is fairly immune from these budget issues over the past several years. And again, this year is not really touched by the budget. Of note, the governor has proposed what used to be called categorical reform and now is called local control funding formula, the idea of collapsing a lot of the categorical, the programs that were focused on one particular thing, and just creating more money per student and targeting them more towards low-income, high-need students. He collapses a lot of categorical programs. After school, the ACES program is not one of them, and that's because it's protected by Prop 49. On the child care front, which is something we've been following for years, because perhaps 100,000 kids get subsidies for school-age child care in California, we've faced drastic cuts over the last 5 years, over $1 billion in cuts, 110,000 slots lost across the 0 to 12 spectrum. This year's budget does not propose further cuts, which is good news, but does not propose any restoration, which is bad news. There has been some talk in the legislature of trying to restore some child care funding. The governor is saying at this point that he does not intend to restore a lot of the safety net programs that he cut. There is some extra revenue this year that he reported in the May revise that was released yesterday. Most of that funding is dedicated to education in Prop 98, and he is dedicating most of that to either the local control funding formula, paying back deferrals that we used, that we took as a accounting mechanism in years past, and $1 billion in trying to implement Common Core standards with training and things like that. So he has not identified restoration of child care, including school-age child care funding, as a priority. We will see in the next month what the legislature does. They have until June 15th to complete their job in the budget, and then the governor has until July 1st, or the end of maybe June 30th, that is, to decide what he wants to sign, what he wants to line item veto. He has that power. And this stuff used to draw out over many months, but since an initiative passed a few years ago that docks their salaries if they don't do it on time, the legislature, surprisingly or not, now does this on time. And in light of the last election and Democrats having two-thirds majorities in both bodies, and you need two-thirds to pass a budget, there's even less of a chance of the budget being slowed down. So we expect that to all happen, and we'll see if there's a chance for some restoration as the legislature moves ahead in the next several weeks. So that is an update on the budget. Moving on to legislation, it's not the most active year for legislation statewide in California, but there are a few bills that do touch on after-school programs. I'll mention two and then turn to Jessica to talk about a third. The first is Assembly Bill 626, which is from Nancy Skinner. And this is a comprehensive nutrition bill, but one thing that it does is address an issue that we saw last year as the federal after-school meals program started being taken up in schools. We realized that all the legislation related to food provided in after-school programs focused on snacks and meeting snack nutritional requirements, and that was a problem because now programs could offer meals and snacks or snacks, and we're finding and hoping that a lot of them will be doing the meals and seeing a lot of increase there, and they get $3.10 per meal per student, so it's a very exciting opportunity, and they're getting a lot of money. But the statute needed some catching up, so this bill aims at that. At this point, it's focused on the nutritional standard front. It originally was drafted to say that you must meet state nutritional standards for snacks with the meal. It has since been rewritten to say you must meet federal nutritional standards for meals with the meal. The department also, I think, is considering adding some, but making a few more changes that aren't about the standards, but just about for applicants for ACEs and assets. You need to certify that you are providing a snack according to statute, and it's likely they will change that to providing a snack or a meal. A lot of that is just clarification. And that bill has been advancing through the legislature. It passed through the education and health committees with only one dissenting vote. It's now at the Appropriations Committee. The second bill I was going to mention is Senate Bill 464 by Hannah Beth Jackson, and that's something that the WISE are sponsoring. And that will be a two-year bill, and it is addressing some of the anti-obesity work that's come out of the First Lady's office in Washington and trying to establish some standards or goals or guidelines for programs related to physical activity, related to screen time, related to healthy food. It was originally written very prescriptive and saying what you have to do, and I think there's been some feedback that as in years past, people don't like things being too prescriptive on after-school programs. So the sense is that they will be loosening that language a bit, it looks like that will feel really, if it is heard, it will be heard next year. And if you're interested in getting more involved in discussions with it, Kathy Barankin, who represents the WISE, is a good person to speak with. Jessica, do you want to share what's going on with Assembly Bill 547?
Sure. Thanks, Brian. Assembly Bill 547 is authored by Assemblymember Salas, who represents Bakersfield and some surrounding communities. This was a bill that was developed originally by the California Department of Education, the After School Division, and it's co-sponsored by the Partnership for Children and Youth and Children Now. And specifically, this bill would add career exploration to the list of activities that can satisfy the academic assistance element of the high school assets program within our 21st century statute. And this bill has been flying through the committee process. It's been on the consent calendar, which means that both Republicans and Democrats don't have any changes or need to hear the bill in committee, that they're in agreement and strong support of the bill. So it's been on the consent calendar for the policy committee on the assembly side, as well as the fiscal committee and on the assembly floor. And it is now in the other house, so it is in the Senate, and has not been referred to the education committee yet, but it will likely do so in the next during this week, and we hope we will all work hard to see that it gets on the consent calendar so it has good chances, at least knock on wood looking at it now, to move through the Senate quickly as well and hopefully land on the governor's desk.
Thank you. And any questions on either the budget or legislative issues? Okay, moving on to the administrative front. The main thing that I wanted to focus on was the 21st Century Community Learning Center's Cohort 8 grants, which the initial awards have been announced. And as As we've often seen, the demand far exceeds the supply of available funding. We're talking about $260 million worth of funding sought for assets and elementary and middle school 21st century programs, and only about $45 million being available, so that's more than a 5-to-1 ratio. That looks like, let me see, about 1,480 sites sought funding, yet as of now it's about 260 sites that have received funding. After the appeals process, we might see some changes in those underlying numbers, but clearly we kind of see repeating that 5-to-1 for every five applicants for every one that there's enough funding to support. And we also saw within that a lot of demand again this year for supplemental funding for extending 21st or ACES programs into the summer months. Usually that's often what it's for, and this year there was almost $25 million sought in that. There's been some kind of changing perspectives over the impact of the federal sequestration on 21st century funding availability, and initially everyone thought that the sequestration, which at the federal level was, I forget, about an 8% cut for programs across the board, that would not impact this year, the amount of money available in this year's cohort, but the department thinks that it will, but is still awaiting its final award letter or not, whatever letter it's going to get from the U.S. Department of Education to see what impact that's going to have. I think in the past we estimated that California would lose about $7 million or so of the $124 million that it was kind of set to get for the next year. So I think the sense is that it does have an impact, but there was also enough money saved from years past that I think they still fully expect to be able to put $45 million out in this in cohort 8. So any questions on that administrative front?
Brian, this is Jessica. I had one question. And someone else on the call might know about the appeals process. How long does that usually pan out or take, just so looking at how the numbers end up, the quote-unquote final numbers?
Mary Jo, can you answer that question for us?
Yeah, I'm going to the RFA because it has it in there. So give me just a minute, Jessica, and I'll get that opened up.
Great. Well, while we're waiting on that, did we get anyone from Washington who could update us on the federal policy?
Yep, Brian, I'm here. I've been listening in. It's Jen Reinhart.
Hey, Jen, thank you for joining us.
Sure.
Great. Could you give us an update from the F-School Alliance? Could you give us an update of what's going on in D.C.?
Sure. Yep. And this will, I think, connect nicely to what you were just saying, and maybe some additional information, at least what we've heard from D.C. about sequestration and how that affects California specifically. So just looking a little bit at appropriations for 21st Century Community Learning Centers program, I'm sure folks saw the president's budget request for FY 2014, so for the next fiscal year, had a $100 million increase in his budget proposal. And as we've seen in past years, also an opening up of the allowable uses to include a longer school day or longer school year as a part of 21st Century Community Learning Centers. Sort of following the president's lead, there were a number of senators who wrote letters to the Appropriations Committee in the Senate requesting an increase for 21st Century, and similarly in the House, we saw the same thing happen with a number of House members signing on to a letter to appropriators there. So there's some support for this increase from the president on both the House and the Senate side, but of course sequestration and the overall kind of fiscal environment is going to make that really challenging to see that come to fruition, I think. Due to sequestration, the fiscal year 2013 budget for 21st Century is reduced by about $60 million overall. It's about a 5% cut to all programs, 21st Century being one of those. The state table that we've seen from the Department of Education and sort of a modified version of that that we have available on our website shows a decrease in California 21st century funding of $1.9 million. So that's a little more than I think what I just heard sort of some projections maybe being, but that might also be some money saved kind of coming into play that I don't know about. Going forward in terms of appropriations, we see, you know, regardless of kind of the support that I mentioned for 21st century, there are huge differences between the House versions of appropriations and the Senate versions in the budget resolution stage, which is where they are now. So they haven't gotten down to the program level funding, but just starting with the budget resolution, which is the overall dollar amount that they want to spend, they're vastly different, and I think that factor alone is going to make it really challenging to actually see an appropriations bill passed this year. We think the likely scenario is probably another continuing resolution, which is what we've seen for a number of years now, where they just can't come to agreement about spending levels. In terms of messages for appropriators at the federal level, for anybody who's interested in reaching out to folks on appropriations, I think, you know, our ongoing message that we're promoting is really maintaining 21st century funding. Of course, we would love to see that increase, but don't necessarily think it's realistic to expect that to happen. Certainly not to see any more cuts, like to begin telling the story of the damage that's going to be caused by sequestration. And also there's likely to be some attempt to include authorizing language and appropriations that would open up 21st century to a longer school day or longer school year. And so another message that we have is really just that appropriations is not the place for authorizing language. A spending bill is complicated enough, clearly, since they haven't been able to come to agreement in years, and that authorizing language really just complicates that even further. So for anybody who, you know, lives in a district represented by an appropriations committee member, that outreach would be really helpful. So certainly, and Feinstein, for example, all of you in California live in a district represented by Feinstein on the House side. I'm actually in my car, so I don't have the list of House appropriators from California with me, but it's certainly available on our website. In terms of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which is, of course, where 21st century is authorized, there is talk about really moving forward with reauthorization of ESEA. Again, this is going to be complicated to actually bring to closure, but on both the House and the Senate side, we expect to begin seeing markup and language circulated, particularly on the Senate side, where there's a tentative June 11th date for markup of ESEA. So that's really when they'll start getting into the details of what they want the next version of ESEA, again, which includes 21st century and Title I and lots of other program, you know, education programs that folks are using to support their after-school programs. We're really hopeful that the language that's in Senate 326, which was the bill that Senators Boxer and Murray and Murkowski introduced earlier this year, that kind of language will be used in whatever the Senate passes to really enhance the existing 21st century language. So that's really the position that we're pushing with the Senate in terms of their markup of ESEA. I'm certain that the expanded learning time conversation will come up again, and clearly, you know, our preference is not to see expanded learning time authorized out of 21st century because we think Title I, school improvement grants, that there are other funding streams that are much more appropriate than a discretionary grant program. But as that moves forward, we'll certainly be weighing in on the importance of community partners and how the learning that happens in a longer school day should complement and not replicate what happens during the regular school day. So kind of a two-pronged approach there, one being, you know, to the extent that it doesn't need to be in there at all, keeping it out, and to the extent that it's going to be in there, making sure that the language for after school and for the longer day is as strong as it can be in terms of playing to the favor of after-school providers and really what we know that we do best already. on the House side with EFEA, we're likely to see the same thing that they did in the last Congress, which is massive consolidation of programs and really huge block grants. So not likely to be any language specific to 21st century other than consolidating it with a lot of other programs for flexible uses at the local level. So in terms of next steps there, like I said, sort of outreach to Feinstein on appropriations would be great from folks. Continued kind of bolstering of Senator Boxer and her leadership on Senate 326 and just overall on this issue. It's always good to get more messages into her that show that folks appreciate the work that she's doing. On the House side, Representatives Miller and Hunter and McKeon are on the Ed and Workforce Committee, so kind of ongoing outreach there as the House bill, you know, starts moving, and again, we'll have to see sort of where that goes. And generally, sort of House appropriators, as I mentioned before, kind of outreach to them, and that list is on our website too. Issues other than 21st century, just quickly I'll touch on. I heard Child Care Development Fund come up on this call and kind of the challenges that you have in California. One of the things that we're seeing happening in other states, just to flag for you as something to look out for, is some pooling of funds away from school-age care to support early care. And this is happening on both sort of the dollars that are available for vouchers to families or programs, as well as the quality set-aside dollars, where even dollars that were being used for quality for school-age are being pushed to the very minimum recommended level in favor of pushing quality of early care. So this is clearly, you know, something, it's a delicate balance there because we certainly believe in, you know, the need for early care and the need for quality in early care, but not doing that at the cost of school-age care is the message that you know, other folks in other states are having to grapple with right now. So just something to kind of be on the lookout for as plans move forward for CCDF within California. On the AmeriCorps side, we're seeing kind of big battles for funding for AmeriCorps and VISTA, particularly on the House side. So, again, just something to kind of be aware of and keep an eye on, and we'll keep folks posted, too, as those discussions continue. And then in the President's budget, we saw big consolidation of STEM education programs, so science, technology, engineering, and math programs were really consolidated, which will be problematic for kind of the informal education community. So they pulled funding from lots of other agencies, NASA and NSF and others, that were dedicated to STEM education and consolidated those within the U.S. Department of Education to kind of oversee all STEM informal ed. So, again, that's just in the President's proposal. There'll be lots of work to be done kind of through the appropriations process before that would actually become official, but it's something to be aware of that could impact the ability of STEM informal ed, like after-school providers. On sort of the potential upside, the immigration bill could actually see some informal STEM education opportunities. There's language in the immigration bill that talks about directing some of the dollars from companies that are able to get more H-1B visas to use those funds to support STEM education. So that's a very complicated issue and one that we're really just watching more than anything else since we don't want to get involved in the immigration debate. But again, something to kind of keep an eye out for since that could end up providing funding for informal STEM education programs. So that's a quick snapshot. I'm certainly happy to answer questions that folks might have since that was a quick run through.
Great. Thank you, Jen, and much appreciated kind of giving us the strategic sense of messaging and where that should be targeted. Does anybody have any questions about the federal developments? No. Feel free, Jen, to stay on for the local update, but also it's already after 6 o'clock your time. You know that's early by Washington standards.
Well, I mean, one thing I would say, if folks have any insight into how sequestration is going to play out in the 21st century competition in the state. It sounded like maybe you had heard a little bit from the state education agency person about that. It's just something we're kind of collecting those stories at this point so that we can begin telling the story of the impact of sequestration on after school. So whether on this call or at some other point, I would love to hear a little bit more about that.
And I think, you know, the numbers that you had were less of a cut than we had originally seen, only, you know, almost 2 million as opposed to like 7 million. And I think that the sense was that they were kind of, it was going to have an earlier impact than they thought originally. And it's just so confusing with the timing of when they get those grants and which year's federal funding they use for which year's state grants.
Right.
They seem to think that, you know, they always kind of thought they would have about $45 million around available in this round, and they still expect to have around that, even once they get the final word on the sequestration. And, you know, I mean, obviously any cut is not good, and you know, in the future, obviously, if we don't keep up our 21st levels at the federal level, then, you know, we can't – it's hard to keep the grants going for 5 years, and it's hard to, you know, have – replace grants that expire, but you know, a $2 million cut out of 120 or so million, you know, isn't as bad as it could have been.
Right.
Mary Jo, did you have any thoughts on the sequestration that you've kind of gotten from the department?
It's basically the same conversation. The department still not clear how much an impact, but felt at least for this cohort 8, due to savings from other cohorts, i.e. money that was awarded but not spent, that they'd be able to make the cohort 8 award. But the impact for cohort 9 and moving forward was very unclear.
Right.
And I think it's just because they're really getting mixed messages from their folks.
Yeah. I mean, and that's great for programs for right now, right? But on sort of a longer-term strategy, not being able to tell the story of the impact of sequestration will make Congress think that sequestration is okay, right? And we can continue to have these cuts because people are figuring out ways to deal with it, when the truth is they're figuring out short-term fixes, but no long.
Except I think the story we can tell from it, okay, is how much requests we had this year.
Definitely.
Versus what we were able to fund.
Yeah.
And that, you know, next year we have another huge cohort expiring next year. So, you know, what the impact will be for next year, I think, can easily be told.
Yeah, that's great. I would love to follow up with you guys afterwards because I wasn't able to write down numbers as you were mentioning them, Brian, and just kind of get that story down on our end so we can add it to kind of the other state stories that we have. So when Congress is asking us questions about, well, what's this really doing, you know, that we have some stories that we can point to.
Yeah, and we can do that. And also, Bruno, if you could just make sure that Jen gets the state of expanded learning, I guess, instead of the state of the after school, the new the network's new report. They do an annual report on what's going on in California, and always spend a lot of time talking about the demand data as well. So we'll make sure that you are on that list, right? Bruno, are you there?
Yes, I can definitely do that.
Right.
I had one additional question. This is Jessica, sorry. On the consolidation in regards to STEM funding, was there specific funding for informal STEM education that was removed? You know, that there used to be a pot of funding just for informal STEM education that is no longer?
Yes. So many of the agencies had pots of STEM education funding within the agency that was like a line item, you know, in the agency. And so again, this is just the president's proposal, right, is to take sort of all of those assorted pots of money for STEM education within the agencies and consolidate them all to be run out of the Department of Education. And I don't know the exact cut, but it's definitely a reduction. If you added up sort of what's currently happening, the amount that they have for the Department of Education is much smaller.
than the overall of all the pot of money that existed before.
Exactly. Yeah.
And there's no language. Oh, sorry. There's no language specifically around how those awards would be given. I mean, I know he has an initiative in regards to teaching, but there's no language specifically around informal STEM education programs and opportunities versus in the traditional school day or something.
Well, there is. I want to say $25 million, but again, I'm operating from memory here, which is dangerous. That is set aside specifically for informal STEM education.
Okay.
As opposed to sort of overall STEM education initiative.
Okay, yeah, 25 for the whole country is not a huge number.
Exactly, and you have, you have to imagine that sort of all those other agencies combined together were spending much more than $25 million. So.
Thanks for the clarification.
There's a blog post on our website that Anita Krishnamurthy, who's our STEM policy director, that she wrote about this, so that would have the details.
Okay. I can refer to that. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thanks, Jen. Any other questions on federal? Great. Thank you. Okay. So, Mary Jo, what's going on with the regional lead?
Well, first off, I want to share that the regional leads did meet May 8th and 9th, and I was not able to attend that meeting because I was still on no-fly orders from my surgeon. So I did send Michelle Perrineau, my very, you know, very, very qualified staff member up there. And the agenda reflected a change that we've been starting to see pretty consistently, which is we used to have reports or updates from the administrators that would talk both about administrative policies, procedures, and process, and then also around legislation. That has been missing from the last three meetings. So those topics were not on the agenda at all. The focus of the meetings were focused around staff development on the first day, around the Why for Why website, and then the fifth module for the regional leads in the English learner training. It's five modules, and the last module was just for regional leads and trainers. So that training about that module took place all afternoon on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, it was a half day, and the focus of the work was ASAP Connect, really taking the lead on that and talking about the five strategies and the triads. As I think I've shared in the conversations before, CDE introduced last summer the concept of wanting to have triads in each region, that being the regional lead, the CDE education consultant, and then the analyst, and if there's more than one, the fiscal analyst being a triad in servicing the grantees within their arena. So there was some conversation around who had what skill sets to implement what strategies. And again, it was a lot of staff development. And then there was a short report out about the triads themselves with a lot of discussion about data. The regional leads have asked about data, about attendance reports, that attendance information that was submitted and used to make the involuntary reductions, and regional leads have yet to get that attendance data. So there was conversation about that, but really nothing around policy or procedure as there has been in the past.
So you're not sad that you missed it.
Thank you, Brian.
okay, so that's interesting and helpful. Do you have the sense of anything that if policy or practice were discussed, things that are brewing at the local level that people would probably be wanting to raise with the department?
Yes, and actually at the February meeting, because I was so frustrated by the lack of this being left off the agenda, as were many regional leads, I actually called an informal regional lead meeting after the formal meeting. And for at least for us to have discussion among ourselves or for any of the regional leads who wanted to stay. And Michael happened to still be in the room and asked if he could join for a while, which he did. And there were a wide variety of issues that we then put in a memo to Michael and at his request. And he has committed to getting back to us. And I actually, Michael's going to be down here on Friday to address our advisory committee meeting. So I'd like to have the opportunity to give him the chance to tell me where they're at in responding to those, and I will see if I can pull that memo up quickly. They're not going to be, a lot of them are not going to be new things. Part of it is around consistency, around, One item, while I'm trying to find the memo, one item that I can tell you is about payment. This is for 21st century. Oh, here it is. Okay. Okay, so the items are parallel programs and what constitutes parallel programs for when they're addressed in the early release programs. There's been all kinds of answers around that one. Still questions about indirect and direct expenditures. Incentives, what are the guidelines around incentives? Because this whole thing about taking kids to a play, okay, if it's aligned with what is being offered, then programs say that's an enrichment, okay? And some at CDE are calling it entertainment. The issue about the double-funded sites, the ACES and 21st Century sites, because the way it operates right now is an ACES site can meet 85% of its attendance and then start tacking into its 21st Century dollars, which leaves some students unserved and how that actually gets tracked, okay? And there's probably 10 issues around that itself. And then charter schools, which I've been talking about because it's been an issue for us in Region 11, but it's now becoming more statewide, is the minimum funding amounts for charters in their first year. So some charters that are just opening, their CDS code may be an elementary code to serve grades 1 through 5, but they're in their first year and they're only serving first graders, and they're getting the full amount, and they don't have the students to support that. And therefore, there's money left on the table, okay, that could be used at another site. So as you can see, there were 11 issues total, and what I'd really like is to, if the committee is comfortable, I'd really like to allow Michael to respond and let me know where they're at with this before we move forward as a committee to follow up on some of these things.
Sure.
Just because I haven't had a chance to talk with him.
No, that sounds right. That sounds so interesting about the charter schools that they could apply for a grant for more students than they actually have in their schools.
Well, we have that same problem with many of our assets grants. At our charter high schools, there's simply not enough students to get the total number of seats in the seats that you have to have, yet they're still awarded that. So, yeah, it's an interesting dilemma.
Well, thank you for that update. Any questions for Mary Jo? Okay. Any other announcements or questions or comments?
This is Jessica. I'm sorry. I have two questions for Mary Jo. I could have a lot of questions, but I won't get into since she still has more process to go to all those policy issues, which thank you very much for sharing. But not necessarily on the policy issues, but in your last few meetings with the regional leads, was it addressed why the administrative policies and legislative piece has been removed, or has that not been talked about? Why?
The issue has not been.
It used
to be that we had an opportunity as regional leads to suggest things for the agenda.
Okay.
That has stopped for about 6 to 8 months now. And we've asked and not really heard back why.
Okay.
And so the answer is no. It hasn't been directly shared why. The agenda, we usually get it like maybe 3 days before the meeting.
Okay. And then in regards to the triad, and this might just be my own ignorance, has that been fully implemented or where?
We were given that directive in August.
August, okay.
Okay, and then at the February meeting, the meeting was really, the two day and a half, we're really focused on every triad reporting out how's it working.
I got you. Okay.
So that was a kind of a mid-year report.
Yeah. So it's still being implemented. I mean, this is the first year of it, like you're saying. So.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted that clarification.
Great. Any other questions?
Well, this is Steve Fowler. I wanted to circle back on the unmet demand on 21st century and just wondering if there's more we can do to encourage California voices to let our congressional delegation know that demand far exceeds supply?
I mean, clearly we have the numbers, so I guess it's just only the question. And I don't, you know, part of it, of course, is the network can and other people can use the state of the state as an educational tool for folks. But clearly people, I mean, it sounded like from what Jen was suggesting, you know, doing some reaching out to, you know, I mean, it's good for Boxer to know this stuff. We should make sure, people should make sure of that, but also Feinstein, you know, sits on appropriations. So I guess I'm not sure what efforts are going on that people are doing on the federal education front, but we should certainly be incorporating this kind of data. I mean, I guess clearly part of that is when the Alliance has their big challenge, always gives us an opportunity, but that is, I guess that already happened, I forget the timing of all these things.
The After School Alliance challenge has already happened. I mean, couldn't the network or some other group send a Boxer, Feinstein, and every House member an informational letter indicating that California's just gone through this process and was only able to fund 20% of the demand?
I think that makes sense. And Bruno, are you on the line?
I am, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, that one of the things that was talked about within the network leadership team, it was, you know, trying to, as this state of the state gets better and better, trying to kind of increase the distribution of it, improve it to legislators, not just buried in the CalSAC packet, but maybe sending something, and also to congressional folks. So I guess it would be good to hear from the network what the plans are for the distribution. And I do think that a cover note that kind of highlights the demand, because that is so relevant as they make policy decisions, makes a lot of sense. But
So Brian, I can share with you two things. As you all know, the After School Network is going through a strategic plan from 2013 to 2016. And one of the items in there is to influence and inform the field on different issues. We're currently working with the CDE on our new contract for next year. And one of the items in that contract is to really take the state of the state and really do work year-round in disseminating that publication, and also doing presentations, webinars, and other things to promote the information that's within that publication, as well as to write the next one for next year. So that is in the works, and that's something that I can see you and Jessica putting into the work plan of the policy committee work plan for next year, and us really working on that throughout the entire year.
Okay, Steve, good suggestion. We will follow through and make sure that this information becomes part of the regular course of business of getting it up to the decision policymakers and with highlighting important things like this, especially at the federal level. Other questions or comments?
Well, then, is anybody urging people that I'm sure are frustrated because they didn't get funded to contact their member of Congress?
Steve, we'll be doing that at our advisory committee meeting on Friday.
Okay.
Because it's the first time we're meeting since the results were posted.
Do you think that's going to happen in other regions, or anybody have a list of who didn't get funded and could email them? And
well, the department has the list of who didn't get funded. I don't know, and I can't speak for other regions.
Okay.
In the past, this is Jessica, in the past, the list of organizations that did versus didn't get funded, do those become public information? I know the numbers are there, but I didn't know.
Those who did not get funded has never been posted.
Yeah, that's okay.
You can request that through a Freedom of Information Act.
Uh-huh.
Request, okay. I know entities who've done that. The length of time to
uh-huh.
hear back has been challenging for them, as well as the cost for copying
mm-hmm.
has been challenging. So I will leave that at that.
There's a balancing point line here of, figuring out if there are legislators from California who are the important people to target on this. If there is somebody who's really important, then trying to investigate who from their district got turned down is a possibility. I mean, I think the problem that we have in California is that, the big decision makers on this, we have Boxer is a huge advocate for it. We don't need to do anything, other than bolster, as Jen said, and Feinstein, I guess, has generally been pretty supportive. And, it's been the House that's, been a big obstacle in a lot of this. So one could do tons of work on creating tons of grassroots efforts in California. I think, that's just a balance that, advocates kind of weigh on whether, how much to push on that. I could see why we wouldn't necessarily want to push, all the people who already got rejected for programs, frustrated enough, if they didn't get that much bang for their buck. I'm not sure. I do think that at a minimum of, getting the aggregate information is very important, and then keeping an eye on where we have a California legislator who could actually, who's going to make a difference on this, then maybe doing more activation. But I feel like we just haven't had California legislators who've risen to that level. That's the perspective from a national organization, of course. that's often how we think. I think we should definitely keep that in mind, and definitely, at least at the aggregate level, be informing these folks. So very important points to make, Steve.
Brian, this is Bruno. Just also wanted to add, there's a possible story with those programs that those communities that have programs and then applied again and didn't get funded. And so when a program is already in place and all of a sudden they lose the program from that community, what happens to that community once they lose that program? So that could be another story that we could do some more work around and be able to tell that story.
And that's easier, can be easier to identify who has had grants that have expired and more of a, you're right, more of a, a story to be told, especially, ones who had to cut back or eliminate the program. That's certainly something to keep in mind. Other questions or comments? Okay, well, thank you. And we will schedule, Justin and I will consult on when to schedule another one. It'll probably be as the legislative season heats up, probably getting maybe closer to bills getting to the governor. And feel free in the meantime for people to, you know, ask questions of us, and we can put things on agendas or get back to people. And we will definitely make sure that the state of the state is well circulated amongst California allies as well as to policymakers. Great. Well, thank you all very much.